It's the Trupany Show with your host, James Trupany.
Hello and welcome to the Trupany Show. My name is James Trupany and this is my show. And today we are going back to the Beginner's Guide to Japan and we are starting, I guess this is volume 3, Guide to Japanese Wrestling. And we're starting on 1992 and some of the biggest cards of 1992. And we've got a really exciting card for you today. It's All Japan WrestleMarinpiad 92. We'll get into the name in a minute because I've just explained it to Chelsea and she howled. So joining me today is Chelsea Spollen of ShouldersUp.net. How are you, Mom?
Doing okay. Just sitting here having some coffee.
Lots of coffee.
Indeed.
Yeah, WrestleMarinpiad is an interesting card. For a start, it's set in a marina, hence the reason why it's called WrestleMarinpiad. And if you go back to the 1989 version of WrestleMarinpiad, which has an absolutely cracking match between Toshiya Yamada and Atsuki Mita versus Manami Toyota and Mima Shimoda, where you see the story of the LCO and Yamada and Toyota start, which takes like 7 years to develop, or by accident. But anyway, it's a really cool show, and they actually have shots of the marina and stuff where they're holding this particular card, which was in Yokohama Bunker Gymnasium in 1992, 25th of April. Now, this is WrestleMarinpiad. We are going to talk about that in a minute, and we don't try and talk about current events on the Trupany Show when we're doing the Beginner's Guide to Japan, but some very sad news happened yesterday. Mr. Pogo, famous heel for Wing, IWA, and of course, FMW, passed away. And we would just like to have a moment to think about Mr. Pogo and his effect on the wrestling industry, which a lot of people like Chris Brooks and Jimmy Havoc were tweeting about in the last couple of days because he's one of their heroes. So just like to have a moment for Mr. Pogo there. But let us move on, indeed, to WrestleMarinpiad 1992, which opened with a six-man tag team match pitting Mima Shimoda, Suzuki Minami, and Yumiki Hotta, all close associates of one Hikaru Hakuto, against Keiro Ito, Miyamori Kamiya, and Tomoko Watanabe. Tomoko Watanabe, the queen of the opening six-person tag. Chelsea, what did you think of this?
This is a really good tag match. My first thought when I was watching this is that, like, you know how one of the complaints that everybody has about Raw every week is that a lot of times the women get a six-person tag match and there's no story development? If the women's segments on Raw were a six-person tag match that worked like this one, nobody would be mad about it because everybody looked good, everybody got their spots in, it had a good flow, it was fun, it got sufficient time. Like, it's an opening tag match, it's not anything earth shattering, but at the same time there's some really good wrestling in it and everybody looks good.
Yeah, I'd agree with you there. And the speed they are going at, Rip Rogers tweeted out something earlier, and I kind of like Rip despite his dislike of aerial wrestling, but that's another story. And he said in one of his tweets, if you start out fast, how are you ever going to speed up? This is how you do it. Because they go fast, yeah, and they don't slow down.
The part that I'm thinking of as you're saying that is the electric chair drop.
Yeah,
that like just seems to come out of nowhere right near the end, like, and Yumiko Hoda's like corkscrew elbow where she just kind of like bounces in from off screen. Like, yeah, it's they start at a fast pace and they just keep it going.
Yeah, it just plows its way through. It just does not slow down. And it's only about 10 minutes long, but there is everything in it. And there's a story there as well. You can tell what's happening. And you're starting to see kind of the story of the card. This card is about shuffling position. This is about building people up and getting people up the ladder of success in All Japan Women. And this kind of is a good example. You know, the last year ago when we last looked at their last big card from All Japan Women, around about the same period of the time of year, April time, there was a lot more younger faces on the card. This isn't it. These people on this card have been with the company for a couple of years. They're well past their dojo stage. There's no nervousness. They're going for it at every opportunity. And this is a really good example of that, especially from Watanabe and Shimoda and Hotta. These guys are veterans. They know what they're doing. They really are like putting in a show and making a strong effort.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we went to the WWA martial arts title match, which is obligatory on All Japan Women shows. Bachi Shinga continues to hold the championship with an iron fist. And I'm pretty sure Akima Terisu, who was her opponent, was the same opponent from the year before. Am I right?
Yeah.
It was. Yep. She's led a hard life as that young lady, even at this point, is all I can say, really, without being rude. And she continues to lead with her face, which is not the best maneuver in a mixed martial arts contest. And she got her nose broken again. Quite heavily, really.
Yep.
Not a lot else I can say about this match. And it was haymaker heaven. What did you think of it, Chelsea?
It's very slightly more watchable than the previous one.
I think that's because it's shorter.
Yes, I think so too.
Yeah, it's not the best, most exciting form of fighting, but the crowd really into it.
Yeah, I think the crowd just really likes Bat Yoshinaga, you know? Like, I think that's all there is to it.
Yeah, really? That's it. That's all there is to it. So, you might want to skip this one if you don't like blood and gore, because there's lots of blood and gore, genuine blood and gore as well, and painful-looking blood and gore. But well, that's enough said about that match. And then we go to a Japanese tag team title match, which is Mariko Yoshida and Takoka Inoue defeating Debbie Malenko and Saki Hasegawa in 18 minutes and 13 seconds. This was really, really good. And to be honest with you, Mariko Yoshida and Takoki Inoue were a really, really good team. They were the heels, kind of, though you couldn't really tell. It was difficult to tell. But the speed they were going, this match had so many spots in it. This is kind of like the Young Bucks versus Rapingi Vice 20 years before its time, I think.
Oh, man, that's a good call. Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah, it's absolutely stunning. The speed at which they go. I think the issue with this match for me is not all of them have much character yet. Takoka Inoue isn't the deadly assassin heel that she is these days quite yet, but there's a lot of fire on both sides, and Debbie Malenko tends to wrestle kind of like a bit like Dean Malenko does, really, all business, which isn't which is good, but it could have done with a bit more fire behind it. But the moves they pull off are incredible.
Yes,
you know, the speed, the was this the one with the armbar, the armbar off the top rope, somebody following down with a Fujiwara armbar, or am I got the wrong match there?
I think this is the one. There is an armbar in this match.
Yeah, where I think it's Inoue comes off the top rope and Debbie Malenko catches her and cranks up on an armbar, which is exactly the same spot, thinking about it, that Kushida and Hiromu Tanahashi did, a variation upon the same spot at Dominion last week, 2 weeks ago. So, you know.
Yeah.
This is a match that's actually ahead of its time. You know, as we said, it's something else. And it's probably lost in the sea of so many great wrestlers in All Japan Women that...
Right, yeah, right.
You know, it's just one of those things. Takoko, anyway, went on to be a big star, and so did Mariko Yoshida. But Hasegawa and Malenko were never more than mid-carders, but they were fantastic. If they'd been in WWE now, they'd be, like, on Sasha Banks level good, you know?
Yeah. So, Debbie Malenko is really good. Like, I was surprised I hadn't heard of her, and then I was like, she retired in 1993 or 1994, I think. She hurt her knee somehow.
Yeah, yeah.
And Saki Hasegawa is another one of those, like, every time we do an AJW show, we talk about, we're like, well, the women who got sort of lost in the shuffle of how good this era was, just because there was so much talent. She's excellent in this match, like, everybody is really good and really fun to watch, and the pacing is kind of experimental. It almost feels like they're feeling each other out for fun.
Yeah, it did seem like, you know, when they say to the WWE guys, let's just go out there and have some fun, this is what they're supposed to be thinking. Not necessarily that it happens, but that was certainly like there was no real rest holes. I think Debbie Malenko got a surfboard on for a little bit, and that was as slow as they went. You know,
yep.
And there was no end of surfboard variations on this entire evening as well.
Also, before we move on, I just want to mention, Debbie Malenko tries to speak Japanese in the beginning, and she actually does a pretty good job.
She was a dojo girl, though, you know, as well.
You know,
she kind of replaced Medusa Miceli as the dojo geijin. So she had a strong like she spent a lot of time there, because let's be honest, at the time in 1992, where else were you going to make that kind of money?
Oh, sure.
You know, sure. So it was full-time employment for her. And she is a fantastic wrestler as well. She's a very different kind of style. She has brought that North American style to Joshi, but she can still hit hard. And she hangs with the, all of these women incredibly well. But yeah, yeah. I think Inoue and Yoshida were deserving champions, really. And because I'm trying to check that this isn't the WWA tag team title match. It isn't, is it? No, it's the...
It's just a Japanese tag team title match on Cage Match.
Yeah. Yeah, this is the AJW tag team titles, not the WWWA tag team titles, which were the big championship of this particular time period. The AJW belts were for lower members of the card. They were mid-card championships, essentially. So you had the AJW Championship, the AJW Junior Championship, and the AJW Tag Team Championship. Then you had the next run of the ladder was the All Pacific Championship and the WWA Tag Team Championship, with Big Red, the WWA Championship, on top, with some other titles floating around, which we'll talk about in a second. So this was an interesting piece of work. It was certainly a fun watch, and you know, it kind of breathed an awful lot of time. How can we put it? Breathed an awful lot of space into tag team division at the time. It showed you how good their tag team division was, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we get to a serious piece of work. The IWA World Championship match between Minami Toyota and Kyoko Inoue. And there's a title change in this, as Minami Toyota takes the championship in 24 minutes and 36 seconds. This is breathlessly good. This is the point where Minami Toyota is becoming the complete God's Own wrestler we know her as today. And in 1992, she was making her first steps towards absolute greatness. Now, the IWA title was a title that was only defended in All Japan Women. And the first champion was Chigusa Nagayo, as you'd probably expect. In 1988, it was held by Medusa Miceli. It was held by Kinoki Inoue. Minami Toyota, Reggie Bennett would go and hold it. Kyoko Inoue would hold it again. And Takoko Inoue, who we've just talked about, she would hold it too. But certainly this was a title match that was just so, so good. And it really shows how Inoue, who a year before had been the AJW Junior Champion, she jumped up the card in short order thanks to her association with Bull Nakano and that monster feud between Bull Nakano and Aja Kong, which we'll talk about in the main event. And Minami Toyota is starting to become the great character we know her be. She's got the full Minami Toyota costume. That raggedness we talked about that she had in 1990 is gone. Everything is super smooth. There's still a bit of gangliness to what she does, but the actual execution of all her maneuvers is absolutely crisp and perfect. What did you think of this match, Chelsea?
This is my favorite thing on this card. This match, like, I was watching this alone in my apartment last night and, like, screaming. there are some absolutely just astonishing moments in this match. It's so, so, so good. I was tweeting about it, and then I immediately had to find a public link to the match, which I was able to find on YouTube, to tweet to people because people wanted to watch it, because I was just talking about how great it was. There's a spot in it that I'm stunned by it, where Minami has this tendency to kind of climb her opponents like they're furniture. she gets a foot up on Kyoko Inoue's hip and then climbs from her hip to her shoulder, uses the shoulder to sort of push off, and does a float over, going like over her head into a cross arm bar.
Yeah.
I screamed. Like it's nuts. It's just such a cool match. Like, one of the things that is interesting to me about wrestling chemistry, when you get two people who have really amazing wrestling chemistry where they can push each other, is that takes a very different form with different wrestlers. Like, a lot of times I think of wrestling chemistry as being something where, you know, you get you get some guys where, or I guess this is more of an issue with guys than I think it is in Joshi, but you get some wrestlers where there's like a frenetic energy where like they have to do moves to each other really, really fast. You know, they can't slow down. And in this match, the pacing of it is very metronomic. Like, yeah. They have each other's timing down, and they go fast, but they don't rush. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's a reason why it goes 28 minutes. Neither of them, I mean, Toyota looks out of breath at the end, but yeah. That's more because of the emotion of her winning the championship, because she's genuinely pleased that she's won the championship.
She looks really happy and really proud of herself at the end of it, but also, like, she's trying not to be too emotional in front of the crowd, and it was really sweet, actually. I was really happy for her.
Yeah, she's, you know, the things in this match that you maybe don't see at first glance. I mean, first of all, like, I've never been a great fan of Kyoko in a way, because she's not as technical as some of her protégés, but that doesn't mean she isn't athletic, and that doesn't mean she hasn't got great timing. You know, she hasn't got the arsenal that Toyota or Yamada or even Akira Kuto had, but she does have this sense of timing, and she has this sense of presence that they don't have necessarily, and she uses every inch of that to her advantage. And she was doing stuff like a surfboard, forward rolling into the surfboard, rather than in a regular surfboard, you grab the arms, you pull back, and you lean back onto your back. She was grabbing the arms, then rolling forward to get the surfboard on, which is something I've never seen anyone do before. You know, she was being
really cool.
Yeah, and she was being pretty innovative with that. But just the aerial work as well from Toyota, like the Asai moonsault off the top rope, where she just climbs up the top rope like it's a stepladder.
It's just nuts. she just
climbs up there, she sticks one arm in the air, I'm going to the top, climbs to the top of the rope, and then just does this perfect springboard, no hands, moonsault onto her opponent on the floor. And even, you know...
And that's after 20 minutes or something like that. Like, yeah. that's a significant portion of the way through the match. She had to have been tired by then.
And even Ultimo Dragon did it off the middle rope. He never did it off the top rope.
Yeah.
You know, and the Minami Toyota's moonsault is always a thing of beauty. But just the way she went after this match as well, and it's just like, she made a short arm scissors look exciting. You know, she's got so much pace and so much speed. But also, it's the selling. You know, when she has, when in a way has a submission hold on her, she looks like she could give up any second. This is, you know, a life or death situation for her. This is as good a sell job as any wrestler I've ever seen. You know, Toyota's facial expressions are always perfect. She always looks like she's either, when she's being beaten down, she really looks like she's being beaten down. When she's on top, she has got this sly grin of confidence about her on a stony face that just tells you she knows she's going to win, and here's how she's going to go about it and do it. You know, and it was, she's just reaching that apex of how good she possibly could be. And one of the reasons why she is so good is because she can take someone like Inoue, who isn't the most naturally talented wrestler in the world, and make her look like the most naturally talented wrestler in the world.
Yeah.
You know, it's so good, this match. This entire card is exceptional. You know, this is some of the best wrestling from AJW at the time period. And we're just getting into the time period where they're going to start mixing it up with other companies. And you look at this card and you start asking the question, why do you need to co-promote with anyone? You know, you've got the best wrestler in best roster in wrestling at the moment. You don't need to do anything else. But they were doing it just because they could. They already owned the business. They wanted to make even more money. Now,
Because why not?
Because it's artistically satisfying. Because they've done everything else. This is the next thing to do. You know? So, yeah. This was absolutely great. Absolutely astounding. And I love this match just as much as you did, I think.
Yeah. It's great. And everybody who's listening to this should definitely watch it.
Definitely. Absolutely. Positively. Definitely watch that match. Okay. We move on then to the All-Pacific title match. Bison Kimura defending the All-Pacific Championship against Toshiya Yamada, Minami Toyota's future tag team partner, in 17 minutes and 27 seconds. Now, this was not, by any stretch of the imagination, a wrestling classic. But it was stiff as houses. They beat the shit out of one another for the first 10 minutes. No one pulled any punches. Yamada is kicking Bison Kimura that hard, you see her body shudder, and Kimura is laying in chops, that hard, you see Yamada's body shudder. It is, yep. It is just absolutely brutal. Now, Bison Kimura is not, like I said, a technically gifted classical wrestler, but she was one of the best brawlers in wrestling at the time, and she learned at the hands of the masters of brawling, Dump Matsumoto, Bull Nakano, and Aja Kong. And this was absolutely stunning. This match was emotionally something else to watch. It wasn't a technically gifted masterpiece, but I really love this match for different reasons. And the presence that Bison Kimura has is quite startling. And you start to see the point where this is Yamada's role. She's never going to get the big one just yet, but she's got to the point where she has all the tools in the place. And Yamada wrestles with an absolute confidence as well. You know, this is something Toyota and Yamada worked on together. They were like so confident in their own abilities. It was something else to see them wrestle because they were just that good, and they knew they were that good, and they projected that greatness to everybody else as well. What did you think of this match, Chelsea?
It's interesting you were saying about how they knew they were that good, because one of the things I just realized that Yamada has in common with Manami Toyota is that when a lot of times when the women come out for these matches and they're getting ready to wrestle, they, you know, they sort of pose, you know, for the crowd. And then when they're standing, waiting for the bell to ring, waiting for everything to officially start, you know, they're very controlled about how they stand. Like, there's a lot of, you know, character presentation going on there. And one of the things that's interesting about Yamada and Manami Toyota is they both don't do that. They don't care if you think they look cool or not. They're just gonna stand there. Like, Yamada kind of, it's almost awkward, like the way she has her hands on her hips at first, and then she kind of, you know, gets into it. Like, she just doesn't really, she's not giving any thought to the way you feel about the way she's standing. She's just ready to do this. And then as soon as the match starts, you know, then she's like immediately on form. This is good. It's a little hard to watch because they really hit each other. Bison Kimura is really awesome. Very, very big personality. Very good at being scary and intimidating. Also, her hair is somehow perfect at the end of this match. And how?
Well, she... Let's see. She... I'm trying to think back in my timeline. It was 1991 that her and Aja Kong lost to Bull Nakano and Kyoko Inoue in the hair versus hair match at Yokohama Arena. And if you remember the show we reviewed a few weeks ago, which was a year before this one, she had kind of a short back and sides, really, didn't she? It was kind of a neat and tidy short haircut, and she started to grow it out again. And you're right, it's still perfect at the end of the match. That's an awful lot of lacquer going into that hair.
It looks like she just got a blowout at the salon.
Yeah, you know, and she's gone a full tilt 20 minutes with one of the best wrestlers on the planet. And just and she's still scary, intimidating. And that Kimura chop is just so, just so stiff. And also, did you notice in the middle of this match, she had wrist control? She had wrist control on Yamada and get delivered five Kimura chops to her, the middle of her chest in a row.
Ugh.
You know, we were talking, me and Alex were talking last week about, about Kuoto in New Japan, one of the rookies who was getting a two count off a chop. But
Kuoto doing the chops. Yeah.
But Kimura was doing that with her chop 20 years ago.
Hmm.
You know, it's... Kimura was ahead of her time in many ways. I was actually thinking about this. The only person I've seen since... There's two people, actually, who I've seen since with that body style and that approach to wrestling. One's Alpha Female. Our friend and newly signed to the WWE. Well done, Jazzy. And also, Heidi Katrina, who's filling a similar role in Sendai Girls at the minute. The big... She calls herself an Amazon. And I think that's... You know, if she says that, that's cool. That big Amazon.
She looks like an
figure.
Amazon. Yeah.
That big
she plays that character well.
Yeah, that big Amazonian figure who is like double tough, but can still wrestle, still has a great innate wrestling ability, you know. And Heidi Katrina does. She's a very good wrestler. I've seen her wrestle all over the world because I interviewed her for Total Wrestling just around Christmas this year, and I did a lot of research on her matches. and trained by Marty Jones, so obviously I'm going to like her.
Of course.
So, yeah, but she is really, really cool, has a really great attitude for the business. But again, you can see that lineage of Bison Kimura because it's different to the Aja Kongs and Bull Nakanos and Awesome Kongs of this world. She hasn't got all-encompassing size. She's just big.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she's got to mix the science with the brawling, really, and she does that incredibly well. So up until the main event, Chelsea, where do you think All Japan is at this particular time scale? We'll talk about the main event separately because that's just something from another planet and we have to discuss that in depth. But judging about from the people you've seen on the biggest All Japan card of the year and the way they've laid it out, where do you think the company was from what you from what you've seen?
I mean, like, if I didn't know that this was considered by most experts to be, like, some of the best women's wrestling that's ever happened anywhere, I would know it just from watching this card. Like, everybody is just freaking awesome, you know? There is no one person in any match who doesn't deliver consistently. And the whole card is really, really exciting, and the crowd loves it. Like, the crowd gets a little overhyped at times and they kind of calm themselves down, but they never run out of emotion to give the wrestlers. And I think that's just a testament to how great all of the wrestlers are. It feels, the last time we were talking about a card in, was it 1991?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Okay, so the last time we were talking about the card in 1991, I think I said to you that I felt like maybe the company wasn't 100% on board with the direction the wrestlers were taking, and I feel like there's been a little bit of a shift at this point where they've realized what they have, and they're letting the wrestlers innovate, you know?
Yeah, I can see that, because it's like, you think back to what Toyota was doing on that card. She was in the semi-main event with Esther Marino against Jungle Jack, Bison Kimura, and Aja Kong. And she had the match of the night. And
yeah,
they were covered in blood, and they were doing incredible things because they had the platform to do it in. You know, those big,
yep,
those AJW Tag Team Championship matches, best of three more falls. Each fall is probably going to last at least 10 minutes. You know, this is going to be a half-hour, 40-minute effort regardless. And they had a great platform to develop what they were doing and show off what they were doing. And this was brilliant. You know, I'd also like to point out the majority of people in this card are still active in wrestling. Everyone in that six-man tag are still wrestling. You know, Kyoko Inoue is still wrestling for Diana. Toshiyu Yamada is medically retired, and so is Bison Kimura. But, you know, Manami Toyota is retiring in November. This is a card where everyone on it had a major impact upon Joshi for the next 30 years. This is the crucible of absolute power in women's wrestling for the next 5 years. You know, this is where it's all going to happen, and these are the people who are going to do it, because they're going to go on to WWE, and they're going to go on to the mixed promotional cards, and to Dream Slam, and on to Big Egg Universe, the biggest women's wrestling shows ever. So, yeah, this is a really important place in where that dynamic is in the history of women's wrestling, and certainly in the history of Joshi.
I just tweeted last night while I was watching this that Becky Lynch does a lot of things that Manami Toyota does, and that can't be an accident.
No, it can't. And if you're going to emulate anyone, you emulate the greatest professional wrestler who ever lived.
Of course.
Yes. But two other contenders for that title are also in the main event. This is not the blow-off, but it is one of the major chapters in the story of Bull Nakano and Aja Kong. They have a WWA Women's Championship match that is absolutely incredible to watch, just because it is so back and forth. There is so much drama involved, and there is so much heavy hitting. You thought Katsuri Shibata was stiff. He is, and hopefully get well soon, Katsurio. However, he has nothing on Aja Kong and Bull Nakano. These two were the top dogs in the yard in All Japan Women in 1992. They were friends outside of the ring. Inside the ring, they were after it because they had to prove who was the best wrestler in the world. And they went about it in such devastating fashion. Aja Kong and Bull Nakano standing there, no-selling each other for 5 minutes while kicking and punching and clotheslining each other as hard as they possibly can to the point where the ring shakes. This is wrestling. It's absolute highest stakes. Chelsea, what did you think of this match?
This is nuts. I feel like I ache for both of them because they just beat the crap out of each other, but it is so entertaining. Aja walks out, I think, with like trash cans in her hand or something. Like, she walks out, she did not come to play. Like, you look at her and you just go, oh geez. And Bull Nakano, you know, the same kind of thing. And Bull has the spectacular mohawk, which she does head banging Kokeshis with that mohawk, and I love it so much. It's just so ridiculous and great. They're both such good actresses. And you really see that in this match. You know, like, there's a lot of wrestlers, I think, especially with the styles that are popular right now, who can do really exciting wrestling moves, but the moments between those moves don't mean anything to you. And this match has absolutely no problems with emotional resonance in that way. Like, everything is emotionally resonant. It's like down to their facial expressions, you know, sometimes to tell you what is going on. But they're both just so like present in the moment and connected to it. And it's really, really interesting. Like you said, they're friends and like they're enemies in this match, but you can tell. You can tell because they're so on the same page. And they're both just really intense and scary and, you know, it's one of those matches where, I guess, technically speaking, I had to really think about it. Like, are they both heels? Is one of them a face? Like, sometimes it kind of seems like Bull Nakano is the face and Aja Kong is the heel, but it doesn't matter, really. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. This is kind of like the story of Aja Kong, because Aja Kong was part of Gokoki Tame with Dump Matsumoto and Bull Nakano. Mm-hmm. When Dump retires, Bull takes over and she turns the crew face. And Aja doesn't like that. So she stays heel and creates Jungle Jack to go up against Bull Nakano. You know, and it's a 2-year story of how do I get to the biggest dog in the yard? How do I be top dog? And you see the development. Like in the last card we looked at, she was still in her white jeans and black and white top kind of punk rock looking kind of a fat outfit, whereas now she's got the signature Aja Kong look.
She does
the satin leotard, the satin pants, the kick pads, how would you describe it, kind of like afro, blonde afro, flat top.
Yeah,
because
there's some gel doing some work in that hair.
Yeah, so she's like, because she is mixed race. Her father was a U.S. Army African-American soldier, and her mother was Japanese. So she is mixed race, and you can, you know, there's the afros going on there, the Aja Kong face makeup that will become her signature, which she still wears today, and she still wears outfits similar to this today. Everything's there. All the signature moves that Vader stole from Aja Kong are there. You've got this development of this entire character from a badass heel who was just trying to make a noise to this cool, calm, deliberate, great wrestler who's going out to win a championship. And the crowd really swing behind her, and she wins the championship within the next 12 months from Nakano. But it's really that story arc. It's a 2-year story arc. It's what the company is all about for 2 years, with all these great wrestlers milling around in the mid-card trying to establish themselves. But this is what the company's been about for 2 years. And then all of a sudden, Kong's the favorite. She's the dominant wrestler, and she will take the company forward as Nakano reaches the end of her career. And, well, perceived to be the end of her career by All Japan Women. But you've also got to bear in mind, by this point, Bull Nakano had been around for 9 or 10 years. You know, she was I think she debuted in 1983, didn't she? She was 16 years old. Or 15 years old. So 15 years old and 9 years into a career. She's only 20, 22, 24?
That sounds about right.
Yeah, she's 24 and she's reached the zenith of women's professional wrestling. At the time, arguably the greatest women's wrestler ever You know, she was that good. And, you know, you don't get dominant monster heels who can have great wrestling matches in this time period. It's just not, doesn't happen. You know, this maybe, you know, Mick Foley a couple of years later is a monster heel that can have a great wrestling match. But there aren't many of them, you know, at this particular time period. Mr. Pogo, rest in peace, is possibly the only other guy. But even then, they're concentrating on the big bumps and the garbage wrestling, whereas Nakano's, right. Nakano's making it work in any environment. If it's a straight-up wrestling match, she makes it work to be great. If it's a cage match with Akira Kuto, it'll be absolutely amazing. If it's a chain match with Shinobu Kandori, it'll be amazing. You will not be able to rest until you've seen these wrestling matches. So she can do it all, and she's big and she's powerful and she's got this character and this presence. The ring entrance, like you said, for her is just something else. She has this big Ming the Merciless cloak with the big collar. She is straight out of a comic book. But when she gets to the ring, she can mat wrestle, she can suplex, she can aerial wrestle with the best of them anywhere on the world.
She's really underrated as a mat wrestler, I think, because it's not something people talk about, but she's so impressive.
Yeah, she is, you know. Like the suplexes she was delivering in this match as well were...
Oh, man, yeah.
You know, and Aja Kong as well, like busting out a German suplex on Bull Nakano and bridging it, landing it correctly without knocking her head off for a start.
When she bridged, I was shocked. Like, I gasped because... that's not normally something she does. Like, I was like, oh man, she's showing off. It's so cool.
Aja does that from time to time. She'll go into a match that's all kicks and flying back fists and stuff, and then she'll just like do mat wrestling for a bit because she wants to, because she's Aja Kong and she can do what the hell
she
likes. I
was going
to
say, how would you stop her?
And to be fair, Arcyon, which was the company she started when she left All Japan Women, was originally a shoot style promotion. It was all mat based. That's all she wanted to do. That's all she was interested in. And the people that got pushed were the ones who could mat wrestle really, really well. So that's her actual first love, if you think about it. She's, you know, the brawling stuff's fine. That's how she made a living. But when she wants to do the things she wants to do, it's mat wrestling. That's what she wants to do. But yeah, so this championship match means an awful lot to All Japan Women, and it means an awful lot to the stories that are going forward. And, you know, this is really kind of like a stepping stone into what's going to happen next in Joshi. When we get to 1993, we'll probably look at Dream Slam 2, as we promised a year ago when we did Dream Slam 1.
Yeah, we have to. I feel like we owe it to ourselves.
We do. Which is arguably the greatest women's wrestling card of all time. Also, Stately Way Manor, ex-writer for Power Slam, told us when we reviewed, you need to do two. You can't just do one. You've got to do both of them. We should have listened to Stately. That's our advice. So is there anything else you'd like to add about All Japan Women in this particular time period, what you thought about the presentation of the card?
Really just that it's not overhyped. When everybody says that it's like some of the best wrestling you can watch, they're not lying. It's true.
It really is, folks. We're not making this up. This is further testament to that. If you like brawling, it's got brawling. If you like blood, it's got blood. If you like technical wrestling, it's got technical wrestling. And if you like the flippy stuff, it's got tons of flippy stuff. It is everything to all men and women and children on this planet. It is the best wrestling you will see anywhere in the world ever. And it, like we said, we just identified a bunch of moves that have not happened in wrestling for another 25 years because people weren't good enough to do them correctly. So... I hope you've enjoyed today's show. It is a little bit shorter, but it was a shorter card, and the quality is so high with this. So we'll say goodbye there. Thank you for listening today. Thank you for listening to The Troopin' Show on the WrestleTalk TV Podcast Network. I'd like to thank my guest, Chelsea Spolin of ShouldersUp.net, for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And you can follow her on Twitter at Chelsea Comics, and you can follow ShouldersUp at Shoulders_Up. You can follow me at Sheriff Lone Star on Twitter. And you can also follow WrestleTalk at WrestleTalk_TV on Twitter as well. Thank you for listening on SoundCloud, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcast from. The Squash will be back this week, probably talking about the pay-per-view Hall of Fame, I think, because they're due another one of them. I'm intrigued to see what they come up with. Have a listen to Gavin and Ben on there. And, of course, listen to Ollie and Luke on the WrestleTalk YouTube channel as well. Thank you very much for listening to us today. Take care, and we'll see you soon. Bye! We'll be right back.